This is the State of Things from the Upstage Cabaret at Triad Stage in downtown Greensboro. I'm Frank Stachow. Thank you. Shareholders for the Reynolds American and Lorillard Tobacco Companies meet later this month to vote on a buyout. The Reynolds bid for Lorillard is worth more than $27 billion. It moves cigarette brands between four different companies, and it suggests the tobacco industry is in the midst of an important shift. A new generation of smokers is moving toward e-cigarettes, raising the question of how long tobacco will stay on Tobacco Road in North Carolina. Richard Craver's with us. He's a reporter with the Winston-Salem Journal, and he's been following the story. Richard Craver, welcome back. Good to have you.
Thank you for having me.
Also with us, Andrew Broad. He's an economics professor at UNC Greensboro, and he studied the business of tobacco in North Carolina. Welcome to the show, Andrew. Good to have you. So, Richard, remind us about the details of this particular merger, Reynolds and Lorillard.
Well, essentially what you're seeing happen is that Reynolds is basically willing to spend $27.4 billion, of which about $7 billion of that will be offset from a side deal related with Imperial Tobacco. But essentially what Reynolds is doing is they're buying the brand Newport, the menthol cigarette, which is the top-selling menthol cigarette in the United States. It's the number two brand overall of traditional cigarettes. So basically Reynolds is going all in on that product in a way to help it, I guess, go through this transition of where tobacco is going.
All right. Well, let's talk about, we're going to talk about the implications as this conversation moves on, but I want to take a look particularly at the details regionally, the economic details. So does this deal protect employees at Reynolds and Lorillard? What's going to happen in those two companies?
Well, in some ways, this was probably the best of all circumstances in terms of how the deal could have worked out, because there had been rumors that Reynolds was going to buy Lorillard straight out. There wouldn't be any side deals with Imperial Tobacco or British American Tobacco. And obviously, there was huge overlap in terms of administration, manufacturing, back office, sales forces. You probably could have seen at least 1,000, maybe 2,000 jobs go away. So from that perspective, by having Imperial come in, and Imperial is basically taking Lorillard minus Newport, and there, because Imperial has such a small presence in Reidsville with Commonwealth brands, you know, they're essentially going to the plan is to essentially take Reidsville and move it to Greensboro. They take over the Greensboro headquarters in Newport, so you'll probably see some overlap of job cuts, but not nearly the level you would have seen.
And those side deals you're talking about have to do probably with satisfying the anticipated questions that regulators would have about this big deal.
Right, absolutely, because if you just did it straight out, Reynolds would have somewhere around 35 to 36% of the market share. Philip Morris Altria Group would have somewhere around 50 to 52%. I don't think the FTC was going to allow two companies to have 85 to 87% of the market share. You know, obviously they anticipated that. So by, you know, by doing this, what they're trying to do is prop Imperial Tobacco up so it goes from basically 4% of market share in the United States to somewhere around 11 and 12%. And if you look at the pattern of what happened in 2004 when Reynolds bought Brown and Winston, Lorillard wasn't that much bigger than Imperial is now, but because Lorillard was presented as a viable enough number three, they let that merger go through. So I think the goal is to allow Lorillard to be, Imperial to be a viable enough three that they'll back off and go ahead and let this deal go through.
So they think there's enough competition still in the industry. As you say, Reynolds is essentially buying the menthol brand Newport, spinning off e-cigarettes, which was another Lorillard product, and that's what Imperial gets. Am I right about that?
Right. And so, but if you go back to the perspective that Reynolds has, they introduced their Vuse product about a year ago. According to them, and like I said, this is according to them, they believe they've got the best e-cigarette product in the marketplace. And if you look at preliminary details that I see from some convenience store analysts and some tobacco analysts, Vuse, which is the Reynolds product, has certainly taken a number of market shares and where they're at. I mean, they're just still continuing to roll out nationally, but their numbers seem to be really good to the point they're, in some markets, they've already passed blue e-cigs. And so I think because Reynolds had that confidence in their product, they were willing to kind of let this be the carrot to maybe get everybody over the hill in terms of the overall deal.
So the government, FTC, is one of the parties in everybody. The other everybody, of course, are shareholders. There are shareholders meetings later this month at Lorillard and Reynolds to consider the deal, perhaps approve the deal. Any sense of whether or not it'll go through? Is there much resistance?
Well, there's been two or three what I would consider significant shareholder lawsuits have been filed, one of which I'll be going to Friday here in Greensboro. Basically, the lawsuit in that case is trying to say that for the Reynolds shareholders, which is about 58% of the company, since British American Tobacco already owns 42% of Reynolds, that they're not getting enough from the British American Tobacco's additional investment in Reynolds to make it worth their while. And basically it comes back to, like you're saying, about the electronic cigarette. Essentially, what Reynolds is looks like they're agreeing to do, and although they haven't come to a principal agreement yet, is to allow British American Tobacco to take their product overseas. Well, it saves British American Tobacco the opportunity of having to develop their own product, and it would probably cost hundreds of millions and maybe billions of dollars for Reynolds to recreate a distribution channel overseas for an electronic cigarette product. So in some ways, it seems to be a win-win, but these Reynolds shareholders are basically saying, we don't think we're getting compensated enough by this $4 billion cash input that British American Tobacco is putting into Reynolds for what that's going to be worth down the line.
All right, so they think they should have gotten a better deal since it's such obviously so good for Imperial. How come we as shareholders aren't getting a bigger piece in this initial sale? And that's a lawsuit. So what about, is there a chance that that lawsuit would then in some way delay the shareholder vote scheduled for the end of this month?
Well, that's the goal of the lawsuit, and that's why I'm going to be going to the meeting Friday or the hearing Friday, is that's essentially the request. The request is to delay the shareholder meeting by at least 2 weeks beyond whenever discovery that the shareholder lawsuit attorneys want to get. I mean, they're basically trying to get information about what the exact agreement is going to be between British and American Tobacco and Reynolds and Lorillard. And my sense is it's probably not going to go anywhere. But then again, you never know when it comes to these kind of shareholders.
And if you're reading the tea leaves and you've watched the FTC in the past and now you're looking at this deal, are there any major hang-ups in the way this deal is structured? Do you think it'll go through? What are the experts saying?
Well, if you listen to the experts, there's still a lot of feeling that this won't go through. I mean, the best people I talk to, who I trust for their perspective, say it's 50-50. And a lot of it's because even if Reynolds diversifies themselves of the brands they are to Imperial, even if they sell off the Blue E-Cigs, they're still going to have somewhere around 30 to 31% market share. And then if you top that on top of Philip Morris, that's 80 to 81%. Is that too much of a duopoly? But if you have Imperial with 11 or 12%, maybe that works.
All right, well, let's take a look at the economic implications. Andrew Broad's an economics professor at UNCG. Andrew, what does this do for Tobacco Road, the tobacco industry? Obviously, a diminished tobacco industry these days in North Carolina, but still a part of our economic and commerce here. What's the implication of this particular merger for North Carolina?
Well, I would say the bottom line is that it's not going to change things that much. You know, as Richard said, the early announcements hinted at a very different kind of deal. And at the time, I was thinking that this could really change the face of the tobacco industry, certainly in the triad here, but more importantly, really hurt Greensboro. You know, there was a good chance that production workers, factory workers, would keep their jobs. I hadn't been reading much about a great deal of production slack at Reynolds' Tobaccoville facility. So I thought factory workers were going to keep their jobs, but the big question was the executives, the management people. And it wasn't that I was more concerned about the high dollar folks than the factory workers, but you know, there's something to be said for a corporate presence in a town, especially Greensboro, which has become over the last few decades a headquarters poor city. You know, we had a lot of headquarters. They were mostly in textiles and apparel. And the flip side of the outsourcing and the job loss in textiles and apparel is that we lost a lot of corporate citizens. Lorillard has become a very strong corporate citizen, and that was what was looking quite bad. So with the news a few months ago that Imperial was going to be a big part of this deal, I agree with Richard. That was pretty good news, not just for workers in general, but I thought it was good news for Greensboro. There's a chance that, in a sense, we will, to some degree, just be kind of changing the nameplate. Instead of Lorillard out on Green Valley Road and then out on East Market, it's going to be Imperial. Time will obviously tell whether a lot of these folks keep their jobs because, as you noted, there are a lot of things going on in this industry, e-cigs being just one of them.
How does that change the corporate culture? I mean, the fact is there are corporate headquarters here and were here in Virginia because this is also where you grew the tobacco.
Here in Virginia?
Here and Virginia. Oh. Here in North Carolina and Virginia because that's where they grew the tobacco. If we move to e-cigs, which require some tobacco but not as much, does it matter where the corporate headquarters are anymore?
Well, could that have an implication? Not as much. That's right. You know, you have a lot of industries that are clustered and located in places where, you know, it used to make sense, and it doesn't make quite the same sort of sense anymore. We have a huge clustering of furniture manufacturers and related companies from publications and design companies around here, even though the significance isn't the same as 100 years ago when they first started clustering here. But you're absolutely right. The supply chain, if we move to an e-cigarette market, and some forecasts are that they could be more popular than that their sales will rise above traditional cigarettes in 10 years or so.
Well, I tell you what, we'll take a break right here, talk more about the implications with Andrew Broad, an economics professor at UNCG. Richard Craver is a reporter with the Winston-Salem Journal. We're talking about changing tobacco industry in North Carolina, and we're doing it on the State of Things from North Carolina Public Radio, a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. We're going to take a break, but first here's some music from the Rinaldi Flying Circus. This is the State of Things broadcasting from the Upstage Cabaret, a Triad stage in downtown Greensboro. I'm Frank Stasio, talking today about the tobacco industry in North Carolina and the future of Tobacco Road in light of a pending deal between Reynolds American and Lorillard Tobacco Company. Richard Craver's with me, a reporter with the Winston-Salem Journal. Andrew Broad is an economics professor at UNCG. And we were talking, Andrew, about the e-cig business. What about manufacturing? I mean, what is that industry like? Do we see manufacturing jobs come here, or will they all sort of begin abroad?
Right, that's the big question. We know that, one of the selling points that Reynolds has had about Vuse is that it's allegedly, and perhaps Richard can address this, all I know is what I read in the newspaper, they claim it's an American-made product. But a lot of these canisters are made in China. The liquids that are used to create the vapor are made in various places. I think for Blue it's in Wisconsin. For Vuse, I think it's Kansas. And so there's no particular reason. I mean, they do use various agricultural products, such as tobacco, to provide, you know, to extract from. But it's not at all clear that they need the tobacco that we grow here in North Carolina. I mean, there's some talk about how they could use sort of a hothouse produced, very high, intensely high nicotine leaf that is not designed to produce good flavor or anything else, is just designed to generate nicotine that they can extract and put into this liquid. So it remains to be seen what this will do at all for North Carolina.
For farmers and for manufacturers.
Well, you see, for farmers, I don't expect it to have as big of a problem. We export a lot of our leaf. And tobacco farmers, you know, even though the quotas are done and the prices dipped a little bit, but prices have recovered pretty well, a lot of farmers have expanded acreage, even though there are fewer farmers farming tobacco. It's not that bad. And a lot of farmers have found substitute products through funding from the 1998 Master Settlement Agreement, through organizations such as Golden Leaf to move towards grape and wine production, sweet potato production. The farmers will probably be okay. They're getting hit by other things.
Well, it looks like the industry is playing both ends of the spectrum here. Richard, Zonic, the nicotine gum, is going nationwide. How is that working out? Do you know? Do you have any sense of how that's working into the business model for Reynolds?
Well, at this point, it's probably a little too early. I guess the bigger question with Zonic is that will the average consumer recognize, A, it's a Reynolds tobacco product, and B, if they do recognize it's a Reynolds tobacco product, will they want to use it, given the history of the tobacco industry for several decades about not being as complete or with their information or as transparent as they can be.
Now, or will they care?
Will consumers care, right? You're saying, yeah.
Well, if you're talking about a product that works, I doubt they will. And matter of fact, it may give Reynolds or some other companies a little bit more positive publicity.
It's a smoking cessation gum, right? I mean, the idea is you come off, you stop smoking, and you use this nicotine gum. So that's, if it works, you're saying, you know, then maybe all is forgiven.
Well, I think that's part of it. I think part of it goes back to what you were saying a while ago about the public health element of this. Does electronic cigarettes, do heat not burn cigarettes, do things like Nicorette serve a public health element? And if they do, then that should be something that's to be supported, not trying to press it down. And then the other thing is, if you think about things like Zonic, who are they competing with? They're not necessarily competing with other tobacco companies. They're competing with Big Pharma. They're competing with GlaxoSmithKline, whoever makes Nicorette and all these other products. Well, there's certainly been an effort from some of the big pharma companies to try to limit what Reynolds might do with Zonic. There was even an effort in the very beginning when Reynolds bought the company who makes Zonic to kind of press it down and kind of have the FDA really not let it get to the level it's even at now.
What about the business model in general? I mean, this is a public health concern. E-cigarettes are relatively new. There's still a lot of debate about how they should be regulated. If you're an investor, I mean, just from the business side, is this still a kind of a risky business to be in? Andrew, I'll start with you.
Sure, there are a lot of risks here. We don't know what's going to happen with e-cigs. We don't know what kind of regulation. We don't really know what the science is going to tell us about e-cigs. Right now, the presumption is that they're a lower-risk product, and that may be true. But there's a lot of risk regarding regulation of menthol cigarettes. There are a lot of unknowns here. But, you know, welcome to economics.
Yeah, talk about that just briefly. Menthol cigarettes, of course, had been an issue of concern. That was something that we could have seen at least debated in Congress, less likely now with a Republican Congress.
You're probably right. I think there's still going to be an effort to try to figure out what to do with menthol. But given the GOP nature of being more willing to reduce regulation than add regulation, I think there may be a window of opportunity that could close fairly quickly in the next couple of years. Now, given what might happen in 2016, it might open the door back again.
All right. Well, I want to thank you both for being on the program today. Richard Craver is a reporter for the Winston-Salem Journal. Andrew Broad is an economics professor at UNC Greensboro. Thank you both for being on the program.